It's TechBiter Worldwide with Bill Blinn. The latest on programs and policies, helpful hints, and a bit of occasional nonsense. All in more or less plain English.
Podcast number 897 for the 30th of August, 2024. This week, if you think sorting out differences between cellular plans is a challenge, try wading through information for the low-cost plans, particularly if the person who will use the plan has some unusual requirements. In short circuits, Microsoft has been talking about eliminating the control panel for about two decades now, and it still remains. It may eventually be forgotten, but probably never gone. And a pleasant Friday afternoon was interrupted by two emails from my health insurance provider. The first said I had used the forgot password function. The second said my password had been changed. Stopping the scammer took only an hour, but it was an hour of frustration. Look at the ads for cellular service providers, and you may think they give all subscribers new phones every 2 years, unlimited high-speed data, full coverage even in the deep dark woods, and have monthly fees lower than the cost of a couple of meals at McDonald's. Then come the asterisks. What the headlines give, the asterisks take away. And the situation is even murkier if you're seeking out a low-cost plan. I've been tasked with finding a workable plan for a relative who is disabled, has virtually no income, and is about to lose access to her current unlimited Verizon plan. Making the situation even more challenging is the fact that she can't afford internet access and a cellular plan, so she uses the phone to watch a lot of videos and for all internet access. Most of the unlimited low-cost plans, and I put unlimited in quotation marks, have limits, 10, 15, or 40 gigabytes of data per month. Cellular providers have a rather flexible definition of unlimited. Once you hit the limit of their unlimited plan, one of two things happens. Either you have no data access, or the system throttles data speed, sometimes to about the rate of a modem from the 1990s. Good luck watching videos with that. Finding an acceptable plan for someone who can afford internet service and a mobile phone plan is easy. A $20 a month plan is sufficient for watching a few videos when you're away from home, and the phone would connect with your Wi-Fi at home. Really easy. In fact, that's the way my wife and I use our plan. So how about one of those $40 internet plans and a $20 phone plan? Well, that'd be okay, but the $40 internet plan probably is an introductory rate, and that rate will magically increase to $80 or $90 or even more at the end of a year. And there's probably a $50 installation fee. So, it looks like the only option will be a mobile plan. A $50 plan would be tolerable. Lower would be better. I looked at a standard T-Mobile account as a comparison with low-cost accounts, and at Mint, which is owned by T-Mobile, Visible, which is owned by Verizon, U.S. Mobile, Telo, and Boost. My wife and I have Google Fi service, which works well for us because we rarely exceed 1 gigabyte of data per month. Additional data is priced at $10 per gigabyte with a maximum monthly fee of $60 for extra data. Adding the relative to that plan would increase the overall monthly cost by at least $80, so I eliminated that option almost immediately. We also ruled out the standard T-Mobile plan immediately based solely on cost. Mint and Boost were ruled out rather quickly because of their low data caps, 40 gigabytes and 30 respectively, and their unacceptably slow speeds once the user exceeds that data cap. That left Visible, U.S. Mobile, and Telo. Telo's price is the most attractive, just $25 a month, but data speed is throttled after 35 gigabytes, and the user needs nearly 15 times that amount of data. I wasn't able to determine what the throttled speed would be. That left two, Visible and U.S. Mobile. Both of the finalists appear to be acceptable. Visible uses Verizon, and U.S. Mobile uses both Verizon and T-Mobile. The plans have virtually identical fees, and neither requires a contract. U.S. Mobile offers a 25% discount for those who pay a year in advance, though, and that makes the cost very attractive. We hadn't selected the winner when I prepared this report, but it seems clear that it's going to be either Visible or U.S. Mobile. So, if you're looking for a low-cost plan, maybe this information will help a bit. Or if you're looking around for a standard plan, maybe the process will be useful for you. Internet service providers and cellular providers are finally having the details they might not want you to see dragged into the light. Pay little or no attention to the overblown promises on their websites and concentrate on the nutrition labels that disclose information about introductory pricing, what real costs will be when the introductory period ends, what additional fees will be on the bill, and more. This is the kind of information you need to make an informed decision. If you find these podcasts useful, and I hope you do, might you consider a donation? There are no ads here, and support from listeners is the sole source of income. It's easy. Just visit the website and click the donate button near the top of any page. You can make a one-time donation or schedule a repeating donation every month. I thank you. And so does the cat. In short circuits, Microsoft launched a new app called Settings with Windows 8 12 years ago in 2012, but it hasn't been able to entirely eliminate the old control panel, which dates back to at least Windows 3.1 and probably earlier, but I don't exactly remember back that far. Back then, there were 12 icons. Today's Settings has just 12 major sections with dozens of subsections and hundreds of settings. The current control panel has 41 main sections. The number varies depending on the hardware in your computer, and there are some options that still can't be found in Settings, so you have to use the control panel. Eliminating the control panel has been on Microsoft's roadmap for years, and they get a little bit closer to the goal with every new version of Windows. There are still a few functions that aren't in Settings. These are usually in one of two categories, or both: extremely uncommon settings that most users will never need, or modifications that should be made only by operating system professionals. But even when, or if, Microsoft succeeds in migrating all settings in the Control Panel to the Settings app, Control Panel probably won't go away. Press the Windows key and type modem. Then press Enter. You'll see a dialog box where you can specify what country you're in, which area code you're currently in, whether you need to specify a carrier code when dialing, and the digit that you need to dial to get an outside line. And one more, whether the computer should use tone or pulse dialing. Few computers have modems in them in 2024. I'm sure there are few that do, but it would have to be a special order from the manufacturer. And if you're younger than about 40, you might not even have any idea what a carrier code is or how pulse dialing works. That's just one example of an antiquated feature that remains in Windows, simply because a few hundred people worldwide might still need it. There is another reason for keeping some of those old features. Windows is an enormous operating system, and Microsoft can't depend on having any particular hardware to run on. Unlike the Mac OS that's intended to run only on hardware that's tightly controlled by Apple. The fact that much of the underlying code has been in place since Windows NT was released in 1993, and some predates even that, the safest option is not to remove or change any old code if it's not creating any problems for developers or users. There is no way to guarantee that removing the code for configuring and using modems wouldn't create some unforeseen error. If it's working, don't touch it. That's the safest maxim for software developers. So despite Microsoft's desire to scrap the control panel, it will persist. Microsoft recently moved some advanced network settings into the Settings app. Options to share folders and printers, along with network discovery options, are now present there. Additionally, the Settings app now fully supports uninstalling programs. Deprecating the control panel has also been a slow process because Microsoft has learned that users don't like sudden, massive changes. Most of the adjustments that were once solely in control panel are now in the Settings app, but they remain in the control panel. Even after many settings were migrated to the Settings app, the control panel retained advanced settings needed for complex adjustments. These include BitLocker encryption, managing storage space, recovery options, file history, indexing, and sound settings. These days, I use the Settings app whenever I can. If I can't find the setting I'm looking for, or if I don't want to take time to figure out where it is in settings, well, then I go back to the control panel. Scammers will never get me. If that's your motto, consider what I encountered in the middle of August. I avoided significant problems, but I'm still trying to figure out how scammers were able to get as far as they did. You probably know this already, but I'm an old guy. I read a lot. The cat likes this because I often lie on the bed while reading, and she can keep an eye on me when I'm doing that. While reading, I occasionally check Facebook and my various email accounts. When I received two messages from Aetna, the insurance company, I knew something was wrong. One said, "Your forgot username feature was accessed," and the second said, "Your password has been changed." Both were unwelcome intrusions into my afternoon's reading. I definitely had not forgotten my password, and I certainly had not changed my password. As Sherlock Holmes might have said, the game's afoot. But now what? Well, when I attempted to log in, my password was rejected, as I expected it to be. So I attempted to change the password, and that process did not work. The site offered to send a security code to my phone number, but one of the phone numbers it offered was unfamiliar, and the area code was in Michigan. But my phone number was still shown, and when I selected it, nothing happened. I'll explain why that happened a little bit later. I followed the Contact Us link, and I'm sure you'll be surprised to know that it really wasn't very useful. The phone number it provided was not the one I really needed to discuss a scam, but eventually I did manage to contact a live person who expressed an interest in resolving the issue, even though she didn't seem to think it was particularly pressing. Over the next 30 minutes or so, it became clear that the support representative did not really comprehend the potential security issues involved, and that she was interested only in helping me work through the process of changing the password, not figuring out how this happened in the first place. Although I repeatedly expressed a concern about security, there was no mention of referring the call to IT support. I had already tried multiple browsers, but the support person wanted me to refresh the computer. And clearly, what she really wanted me to do was reboot the computer, not refresh it. In the Windows world, refresh means reinstalling the operating system. In light of what I had already done, both reboot and refresh were nonsense. Instead, I switched to a tablet computer where the password change process worked. At that point, I thanked the Aetna support person for her help, changed the password, removed the Michigan phone number from the account, changed my security question, and set up two-factor authentication. That's something I should have done previously. But how did this happen? Well, I still don't know, and it's unclear what the scammer's intent was. Here's my guess. Perhaps the intent was to bill the account for a service that had not been performed by some non-existent entity. That seems to be one of the more likely possibilities. Medicare scams are common. It seems that whatever the scammer's intent, though, I stifled it. No thanks to Aetna. In the days following the event, I logged into my Aetna account repeatedly and confirmed that the username, password, phone numbers, and email address associated with the account were correct and unchanged. Now, earlier, I described the Aetna website's total lack of response when I attempted to have it send me a confirmation code. Well, as it turns out, that was partially my own problem. I use Bitdefender's protective applications, and that includes a browser extension, Bitdefender Anti-Tracker 1.5.0.38. It's intended to block trackers that collect data when users are on the Internet. Using a binary analysis system, I was eventually able to identify that particular browser extension as the cause of the problem. When it was enabled, the validation process failed. When it was disabled, the validation process worked as expected. Well, nothing is perfect, and that definitely applies to protective applications. I have disabled the Bitdefender Anti-Tracker extension, and operations are now as expected. Thanks for listening to TechBiter Worldwide. I'm Bill Blinn. There's more on the website, techbiter.com, and if you have a question or a comment, use the contact link you'll find there. Stop by again next week for another session.